views and opinions of any of the guests of After Hours AM are not necessarily the views and opinions of After Hours AM, its hosts, its staff, or any of its affiliates.
Broadcasting live from the After Hours AM studio, Joel Sturgis and Eric Olson.
And good evening, one and all. Welcome to this edition of After Hours AM. I'm your host, Joel Sturgis, right along with me, as always,
Eric Olson and
Heidi Hollis.
And you know what this is? The official kickoff to our Halloween season, guys. Do you want to know why?
Why?
We're having a real live, well, opposed to dead, I guess, witch on with us tonight. So this is kind of like the kickoff to our Halloween season, because we're actually going to be talking about Halloween in this cool book.
Talking about a Halloween book.
Exactly. So this is the kickoff to our Halloween tradition, though, you know, we're Halloween heavy from here on in, as everybody knows and expects and loves. And that's from Llewellyn Publishing, our good buds, The Little Book of Halloween by Mickey Mueller. And you're going to want to hang around for the top of next hour, because she covers a lot as well. There's a lot going on with her, and great talent, great author. So you're going to want to hang around to hear all about the history, not only the history of Halloween, but we might get into some witchcraftian things and how it actually really works. So you're going to want to stick around for that. And but guys, how you guys been? You guys been surviving?
Well, yes, here I am, alive and all.
Well, there's a hurricane. There's a hurricane hitting some of our friends right now.
It's a large hurricane. It hasn't even hit yet. It's slow moving, which is the worst thing about it. Dawn's downstairs staring at the TV because, of course, every news channel covers it 24/7.
They get flapped around in the wind. Do we have to watch that?
Isn't that hilarious, though, to watch them? like this one reporter was talking about the deep water he's standing in, and these people just kind of walk around, and it's not even up to their ankles.
Right. You guys will get a kick out of this. Somebody sent me an image of, do you remember that old show, The Jeffersons?
And I do.
Florence was the housekeeper.
Yes.
And they put Hurricane Florence, here she comes, and she was pouring herself a drink. I started dying.
Moving on up.
It's like, yep. Here she comes, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
exactly.
She was probably drinking a hurricane.
She probably was getting ready, because it's Florence after all. So I know, Heidi, we're going to be talking about a show that everybody has been talking about and has asked me and Eric, and basically is curious if we're going to do a rundown of Hereditary, the new movie that is out on Blu-ray and DVD and 4K, wherever you can get it at. It was in the theaters. I missed it in the theaters. There's a lot going on in this movie, but I understand that you don't want to be part of this particular movie review.
Exactly, because I want to see the darn thing. Nobody was curious about my opinion on it.
Okay. Well, you know, we kind of do cover movies, and I'm more kind of the leaning guy that does that. I'll kind of come up. Eric does once in a while, too. Eric, you haven't seen this yet, have you?
I have not.
Do you care about a spoiler or two?
I do not.
Oh, good.
Thank God.
It's never the same, you know? I mean, often I get to movies late, you know? Yeah. I try to get to the theater periodically, but usually, frankly, just don't get there. Just too flipping busy.
What I could do, I could sit here and plug my ears and go la, 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 la the whole time.
But, you know, by the time it hits video, right, every spoiler on the planet is already out there on the internet.
It is. I kind of avoid it. I'm fairly judicious about where I look. You can tell. Well, it should say at the beginning, right? Spoilers ahead.
Exactly,
so,
like we always do.
I don't know a whole lot about this one, other than that I know it's gotten a lot of very serious horror people really raving about it, saying it's truly frightening, and it's absorbing, and it's a whole different perspective.
Well,
so,
Before
I didn't realize it was seven theaters already.
Before we get into that, I'm going to give the normal countdown we always give for spoilers, which is 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is your opportunity to turn off your radio so you do not hear any spoilers. This is your, and listen after you've seen the movie, in that case, and see if you agree with us. So,
and wait, wave your hands when you're done.
Well, we'll just go to break. That's okay. We'll let you know. We'll pull you out of the corner at some point.
Okay, don't worry.
Yeah, well, if you kind of listen, you're going to get all the spoilers, so you might as well just completely listen.
Okay, maybe I should.
You should kind of completely listen.
Yeah, exactly. Right,
think of it this way. Well, let me present it this way, okay? When you went to see, whenever that was, and I actually saw it in the theaters because I'm that old, but when you went to see The Exorcist, or when you saw it for the first time, you already knew the story.
Yes.
I already knew the story. I knew the story when I saw it, you know, when it first came out.
Yeah.
You know the story. It doesn't make any difference. It's how it's done. It's not what it is. It's how it's done.
Exactly. And see, I waited purposely for this movie to come on video, which I'm glad I did, because it's like 2.5 hours long, and it's a slow 2.5 hours. That's one thing I do have to say about the movie. It is it's a slow burn. So if you're looking for the jump factor, like a lot of these movies do now, you're not going to get it out of this movie. It's just not going to happen because it's not there. So it goes from, really what it goes from a family tragedy type movie. It opens with one of the lead character's mother passing away, which is Toni Collette's character, which is Annie Graham. Her mother had passed away. And really, the movie does open up with a text version of her mother's obituary. That's how the movie opens. But then it quickly moves more into a grieving family movie. And then it morphs into a psychological thriller movie. And then it morphs into a complete all-out horror flick that makes you go, oh my God, what did I just watch? So it has all that going through it, but it does it in a very long runtime. Bear in mind, Ari Aster, he's a first-time filmmaker. This is his directorial debut. Cut a whole hour off the movie, so it wasn't any longer. But the first 90 minutes is very slow. It's a very slow burn, very very methodical. I gotta say, the imagery was fantastic. The way it was shot, it was beautiful. Going into the movie, the tagline that I heard from several different outlets and people, scary as and scarier than The Exorcist. That's a big mountain to climb, because The Exorcist for years has been the test, you know, to measure everything else that came after
it. The pinnacle.
Exactly. You know, how scary is it compared to The Exorcist? Forever, everyone's used that as the watermark. You know, where does it land? I'm going to say it falls short of that. I mean, it's good. It's there. It would be in the same conversation. But time will tell, because this is 43 years later and we're still talking about The Exorcist. Are we going to be talking about this movie in 43 years? That kind of thing. That, and it wasn't as viscerally scary as The Exorcist. It was scary, and in the movie, it turns out that the lead character's mother was a witch, and this is where it ties into the theme of the show, and she was conjuring with her coven, with her cult leaders. They were attempting to bring about a demon from hell. It's Paimon was the name, Paimon, and throughout the movie, you see... You don't know this at this point until you absorb the whole movie, but throughout the movie, there's just, it relies very heavily on visuals of this mark, of this demon. So wherever you see a mark, something's going to happen. So if you see a mark somewhere, something's going to happen of that demon. The movie, like I said, was long. It was good, though. I mean, my God, if anybody deserves an Oscar, Toni Collette's right there. Eric, I mean... Normally, horror flicks are not known for great acting, but my God, it's a tour de force. I mean, just amazing, amazing job she did.
Well, she's been around quite a while. She's had a lot of different kinds of roles. She's been in comedies. She's been a lot of kind of family dramas. She's often the mother. you know, of younger children or teenagers, that kind
mm-hmm,
of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, she is. She's an excellent actress. She's very versatile. She's Australian. So every time you hear her speak with an American accent, that's always an accent. It's not her real voice. And she's also kind of stayed young. You know what I mean? She kind of looks the same as she has for 20 years.
Well, she was also in The Sixth Sense. So she was the mother from that film. So she had some experience in the genre of filmmaking. So she really brought it, though. Another good one, another bright spot was Alex Wolff, and he plays Peter Graham. Does a great job. Does as a young actor.
He's become really a very, very busy, busy actor. He's been in all kinds of things lately, just in the last couple of years. You know where he got his start, don't you?
Where did he get a start?
On Nickelodeon.
Really?
He was half of the Naked Brothers band.
I did not know that. I did not know that. And Ari Aster, he was a short filmmaker before this. This is his very first attempt at a full feature-length film. And I'm going to be really surprised if there is not some Oscar buzz over this. I'm not even kidding. Just because of the tour de force kind of acting that was involved.
Wow.
It was very, I mean, very, very good acting. I mean, that was the thing. I mean, even though it was a slow moving, slow burning film, the acting, just how well they acted it, kept it going.
All right. So since we always get into this territory when we have guests who are involved with a film, well, I mean, we just kind of talk about it regardless of what the topic or what the subject is. What? Give us a rundown on the mythology presented in the film. What, you know? What is the worldview? What exists?
Yeah.
What is real?
Well, what the coven or the cult, whatever I've heard it called, both things in the movie. Toni Collette's character. She was a worshiper, a practitioner of the dark magic. They were trying to bring about King Paimon, and he is one of the guardians of the doors of hell. He is actually, Aleister Crowley writes about him quite extensively in a couple of his books, but the biggest one was, of course, The Lesser Key of Solomon, was where he made his big debut in art and in books. This demon should have come about, will give you ultimate power, live forever, all the things you'd want as a demon, and basically, the mother was Toni Collette's character, two children, which both of them outstandingly acted. In fact, Millie Shapiro makes her film debut in this movie. New actress named Charlie Graham. She plays a bit of a quirky kind of character that's just not quite right. Maybe mentally a little slow upstairs, but man, does she play the hell out of that thing. The grandmother vetted, or she kind of took over Toni Collette and Graham's family. She was prepping Alex Wolff's character, Peter Graham, to be a vessel, because you cannot have a female host for the demon to be possessed long term by Paimon.
Wow.
And so this whole movie, as you find out, you're not looking at the perpetrators, you're looking at a story from the point of view of the sheep being slaughtered.
Dang. I am reading. Boy, they don't pull any punches in Wikipedia. There are spoilers galore.
Oh, yeah.
I am reading the end of the film right now. It sounds horrifying.
That last half hour of that movie, because, I mean, you got to wait 90 minutes before it really gets going. But that last half hour, 45 minutes, is absolutely breakneck speed. Scary as all hell. I'll give it that. But this is where I give it the but, is it's not quite as scary, in my opinion, as The Exorcist or Rosemary's Baby or those other films that they are trying to put it in the same category as. I want to say those two films, just for whatever reason, especially The Exorcist, has it just by a nose at the finish line. It really does. A lot of that is because the slow burn leading up to it. A lot of it is They over-explain the plot. They don't leave a ton to the imagination. It's like it's force-fed down your throat what they're trying to do in the movie. You know what I mean? It doesn't give you any... There is no veering off into your own imagination. You are directly being led by the nose by this filmmaker.
Okay.
And so
the other thing is, just and again, I have not seen it. So just thinking in general terms, you're just never going to quite have the shock factor.
No, exactly. And that's...
Then the first time. And The Exorcist was really the first time we saw something like that.
Yeah. A good friend of mine has been doing movie reviews forever. He remembers when The Exorcist first came out, and you were still allowed to smoke in theaters back in those days. And he remembers during the scene where Reagan was really just, it was just coming to a crescendo, and the head was spinning and everything was going down. After every major moment during that movie, the audience lit up a cigarette. It was like they were just so emotionally just punched in the face that they had to do something with themselves.
Is Heidi still with us?
I don't know. Are you still with us? I guess not.
No.
But, okay, the movie...
It was too much.
The movie is basically a point of view of the lamb going to slaughter. This family's being torn apart by what was set in motion by the grandmother that would go into motion after her death. So this is all post-mortem for her. She was vetting or getting the children ready, especially the Peter character, to become the vessel for payment to take over. And there's a whole group of people working against them to make sure it happens. There was contingency plan after contingency plan. If they were to somehow defeat one area of to stop this from happening, there would be another way to get it done. There was just no way these people could avoid this.
Wow. Well, now, very interesting. I certainly am going to have to see it. It sounds pretty horrifying. It sounds... One of the things about, I think, some of the most successful art in general, and in particular, I guess we're talking about horror films or horror-like films, is a sense of inevitability.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
inexorable. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what you were just saying. Like,
it
couldn't be stopped. It was no matter how, you're given... spots along the way, you're given hope along the way, but deep in the back of your mind, you know this cannot end well.
Well, this lady had Toni Collette's character as a child solely to create other children.
Wow.
Because her son in the movie, I mean, we're getting a deep spoiler territory here, so again, spoiler, the first person that was supposed to be the vessel for payment killed himself due to schizophrenia.
Wow.
So then goodness. She had to turn to alternate means, which was going to be her grandson, and ultimately, it does happen.
Yowza, yowza, yowza. Amazing stuff. Yeah. Well, I am guessing that our guest tonight is a good witch.
Well, I'd like to ask her about the demon payment. If she has any knowledge on that, whether or not that particular movie was true to that story. Whether or not that would be something that they would actually do. Would that be truly, if you had the mind to do that, could that be something to be done? Could you conjure up payment? Allegedly, of course, anyone that's curious, is one of the Lucifer's most obedient devotees with over 200 legions of demons.
Goodness. All right, so now the one thing I didn't pick up on, does the Toni Collette character know all this? Did
no,
she know all this was
no,
going on?
No, she doesn't know any of this. I mean, she said her mother was a very secretive lady and had strange rituals at her funeral. But she had no idea to the extent as it unravels. You find that Toni Collette's character ends up being possessed at some point. Being tricked into thinking she's a medium, or she is. It's kind of funny because the first person that is channeling spirit is channeling a ghost called Louis. Is that kind of funny or what? Or is that short for Lucifer? We find out, at least in my mind, that was short for Lucifer, that they are communing with the devil to make this happen. So you're going to have to really watch. I'm really trying to hold back here for the benefit of anyone that hasn't seen it. I know I gave a ton of spoilers out, but there is just some moments in that film that will make you drop your popcorn, man, where you're just like, holy crap, did that just happen?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to add any more. Again, I haven't seen it, but I just read the plot synopsis in Wikipedia, and it pulls no punches.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's all there, isn't it? It is all there.
It sounds horrifying.
If you got an hour and a half or 2.5 hours that you want to waste, or not so much waste, but watch a really good in-depth movie, especially if it's raining out, dark, well, man, I can't think of anything better.
That is a long movie.
It's a very long film. It's about 2.5 hours long, and the first 2 hours, hour 45, is very slow, and it builds up. You can feel the film building as you're going. Just keeps going. It's relentless. It just keeps going. You know something's going to happen. You're just not sure what.
All right, so let's get down to the nuts and bolts now, since we're already 20 minutes after the hour or thereabouts. What kind of grade do you give it, and where do you think it fits into the overarching horror pantheon?
I would give that one... Okay, I would give it 4.5 if it wasn't A, so long, and B, if it wasn't so, you know, you need to go in that position, doesn't leave anything to your imagination, which is really... I like that when you truly get to leave something to your imagination, even after the credits roll. That was not there. And so I'm going to go. I think it's about the highest we've ever done this show, about 4.5 stars.
Out of 5.
I would go a full 5. Now, Exorcist is a full 5. That's sure. An absolute 5. That's the perfect horror film in my mind. It has everything. It's got the dramatic parts. It's got the scary parts. It's got everything you'd expect in a good horror film. This is everything there. I do say, though, it is better, and I'm sure we can get some flack, it is better than the Amityville Horror movies, than the original.
Oh, well, it sounds like it.
So, I mean, if you want to kind of put it on a scale, it is better, dare I say, than the Conjuring film.
Sure. Well, I mean, I liked The Conjuring, but I don't think it was amazing.
No.
I'd give The Conjuring, I mean, as a film in general, I'd give it about a 3.5. As a horror film, I certainly gets a solid 4. It is one of the better horror films around. But, I mean, you know, it's somewhat predictable. There's scary parts, and yeah, it's interesting, and acting is very good. Excellent, even, acting. And it's well put together, but you know, it doesn't take you, didn't take me to the next level. I like that universe. It's an interesting universe. I will see The Nun, although it's getting very mixed reviews. It's done super at the box office, that's for sure.
Yeah.
We'll see how it does this weekend. This will be the second weekend. That's often telling on what kind of legs it's going to have.
Yeah. Well, really quickly, this movie, it's funny you say that. Got a 96%, I do believe, of Rotten Tomatoes, so it's fresh.
Wow, very high.
But the audience gave it a D- cinema score.
What?
Yeah, it's that far away from each other.
I've never heard of such a thing.
The critics gave it like rave reviews, 96% fresh tomatoes. I do believe that The Exorcist, if you look up Rotten Tomatoes, is like one of the very few horror films that's 100%. Well, this is at 96%, but the cinema, the everyday moviegoer, actually came in at a D-.
How can that be?
I think a lot of it is the length. It's such a slow burn. You know, it became more of an art film than it became a... You know, it was kind of... The trailer was misleading. That was the gripe I heard from a lot of people, is the trailer showed a very scary and very in-your-face horror film from the trailer. And then you go into the movie and you get this very drawn out dramatic, much like The Witch. It's very much like The Witch in that way. Very slow. In fact, it's from the same
atmospheric.
Company. Yep. Very atmospheric, relies on, you know, subtle clues of what's going on rather than in your face, punch in the face kind of horror. Kind of like we watched Lights Out before we watched this film. And that was a complete punch in the face movie with jump scare after jump scare. Right. Where this relied more on the atmosphere. In fact, it's from the same studio that brought you Witch. That A24 studio.
Well, I really found The Witch disturbing. I thought it was really good. I often like the slower burn. I find it more absorbing. Mm-hmm. Jump scares are just, you know, just that.
It's cheap thrills. It's cheap thrills, in my opinion. I mean, yeah, there's two movies that always, three of them that stick out my mind. It's kind of like the Holy Trinity of horror flicks. The Exorcist, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original one, and Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, well, and they're kind of the, they are the pinnacles of the of subgenres. Yeah,
exactly, those were the ones that started it all.
Right, you got the possession film, you got the zombie film, and you have the, I guess, for lack of a better, it's sort of a slasher film, I guess. It's not exactly, but as far as Texas Chainsaw, I mean, ultimately, that's, I guess, what it is. You know, maybe if you wanted to go really pure slasher, you know, you could put Halloween in there, perhaps. I don't know. What do you call Texas Chainsaw Massacre? What is it? It's not really a slasher film. What is it?
It's more, I guess it would go more into that torture kind of almost arena where Saw draws from.
And the extremely odd,
just family,
weird, disturbed, demented, deranged family.
Because you look at a Saw movie, the original Saw, and you look at Devil's Rejects, you could see where they drew heavily from Texas Chainsaw in a lot of ways.
Many, many, many movies have, of course.
And so,
what's interesting, I know you've mentioned it because you're like you said, those are your films. Those are your classics. And when you actually boil it down, there's actually very little blood in Texas Chainsaw. It's implied.
Yeah, it is. It really is. In fact, years ago, I interviewed Toby Hooper, and we were talking about that. And I said, you know, how do you feel about being banned in 48 countries for blood? He says, take a look at that movie again. There's no blood. So I did. There's really hardly any blood.
Right, right.
It's
camera angles, and you know, it's implied. And I mean, it's same with, think about the classic, you know, top five, top 10, certainly moments, cinematic horror moments, is the shower scene.
Yeah.
From Psycho.
I mean, there's so many.
You never see her get stabbed.
No, it's so many pinnacle movies, now that you mention it, that are, should be on a list of the pinnacle movies. Like you just mentioned, you know, Psycho and Halloween. You know, some would say, of course, Friday the 13th could be in that argument. Because Friday the 13th was a direct knockoff. I don't care what they say of Halloween. It really was very much a knockoff.
Sure, of course.
You know, but it was still its own movie, its own right, and it should be on that list of the greatest, you know, things that influenced us in cinema. This one, I think it's good, but I don't think 43 years later we're going to be using it as the watermark for what's out now. Yeah, I mean, we won't be using this movie. It was as scary as Hereditary.
We just won't be doing that. Still liked it a lot. I mean, that's a high score.
Oh yeah, I'll watch
that's
it again.
High score.
I'll watch
you
it for
a lot. You give it props. You explained it very well. I think you broke it down into the portions. And I know you tend to shy away from longer films.
I do.
Anyway,
I kind of do that, and ones I have to read. Another film that's coming on the horizon that I'm definitely gonna be seeing, and that's Bohemian Rhapsody: The Story of Queen. That'll be a must see for me when that comes out as well. So,
quick little snippet from it. Looks like he is embodying Freddy.
Exactly. Look for us to do a movie review on that one. So let's go to break so we can have Heidi come back and join us, so she doesn't have to hide in the corner. So when we come back,
covering your ears, going la 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 la.
Exactly. We come back. It's your America's Most Haunted Headlines. Don't go anywhere. Otherwise, we're gonna send payment guy after you, whoever his name is. You don't want that to happen. Trust me.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
My backyard.
Oh, your backyard. Try telling a bear that.
I did, and this bear talked back.
Talking bear, that's rich.
No, wait, it was Smokey Bear.
Smokey?
Why didn't you say so?
I did say so.
Continue.
I was burning yard waste.
No, boy.
He told me to burn legally and responsibly, and to remember that if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
And as always, he's right.
You know, 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Yeah, I know that now.
Thanks to me.
Actually, thanks to Smokey.
As usual, the talking bear gets all the credit.
Get your Smokey on. Always burn responsibly and contact your local fire department for open burning regulations. Because 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Northern Tool and Equipment.
I got a rather serious problem over here.
All right, what are we looking at?
Cranky mother-in-law asleep on the couch. In the man cave.
Dear God.
It gets worse.
That's impossible.
She's passed out on the remote.
I stand corrected.
But what do I do?
Okay, I want you to grab a Torin Big Red hydraulic bottle jack.
Okay.
Now you wedge that bad boy in under your mother-in-law and crank her up skyward.
It's working. And got the remote.
Great. Now grab that Torin Big Red 2-ton folding shop crane and put that woman on wheels.
And away we go.
There's no problem a little horsepower can't solve. Northern Tool and Equipment.
And welcome back to After Hours AM, everybody. I'm your host, Joel Sturgis, right along with me.
Eric Olson and
Heidi Hollis.
Yes, indeed.
Yay!
Miss Runaway from hearing movie reviews and that kind of stuff.
Yes, I'm so sorry. I really want to see that one. So
you know, actually, just to give one more tidbit about the movie, my wife it won't be a spoiler, but she's a hardcore movie person, right? It takes a lot of a movie to move her needle, right? Because she sees, you know, I mean, she's sat through all the jump scare movies with me and everything else. This is the only one in a very long time that she sat back, went, holy crap. You know what I mean? As in, makes you kind of think. You know,
yeah.
Those kind
well,
of movies,
it looks
so.
Startling, and I saw what happens to people, and that sounds very startling. But conceptually, I guess is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyhow, fire up the yay old Twitter. And you need to follow along and search out AM Hana. Again, you don't have to be a member of Twitter to follow along and look at these cool images that Eric has put together for us to enjoy as we scroll through it. And as always, these are brought to you by America's Most Haunted. You can visit us and listen to this show and past shows and get to know us, all that kind of good stuff. And americas-most-haunted.com, your one-stop shop for all things horror, macabre, and amazemo.
I love that word and the fact that you use it.
That's right. It's a great word. It should
it's
be
an
Webster's.
Amazing word that I myself created, and I'm like Shakespeare.
We should submit that to Webster's.
We absolutely should, and if they reject it, we will
I was going to say, I thought you came up with that one.
I did.
Yep.
Yeah, I was like, I thought Eric says that. I'm like, Joel said it just now?
Yep. Yep. Yeah, that's one of the taglines. Amazing.
It's contagious.
Yes, I've been given the permission to use that.
Free range. Free range. All righty then. So let's take a look. Of course, we got the tweets for tonight's show, and no need to talk about that because you're listening to the show. Good for you. Gosh darn it. Our buds at Midnight Syndicate. We're going to have them back on this Halloween season, although it's not easy for them. And the reason it's not easy for them is they took a year off, but they are back doing multiple shows. I was looking at the lineup. They do, it's like at least 10 shows each weekend. Oh. It's Friday through Sunday at Cedar Point's Halloween Weekends. And like every other amusement park, they start earlier and earlier, my friends. So Halloween Weekend starts this very weekend, and Midnight Syndicate is playing live. It's their acclaimed Conspiracy of Shadows show. And it'll be going Seriously. All throughout the Halloween season from Friday through Sunday. So you got to check that out. If you don't know who Midnight Syndicate is, they are the all-time haunted house kind of goth horror soundtrack band. If you've ever been in any haunted attraction, basically, you've heard them. And they're all over the place. Their CDs are great. They're actually quite varied and interesting. It's not monotonous. It's not just the same stuff. And we talk to them pretty close to every year, and we will definitely be talking to them this year and see how that show's going for them and see what's new and see what's going on. They've been around for over 20 years now. I think last year was their 20th
anniversary.
Yeah, it
was. And what was funny last year is we always have on for Halloween, but I got to say, one of my favorite interviews we did with them was during the Christmas time when they had a Christmas
album. Oh, yeah, because they put out the Dark Christmas album, which is really great, actually.
Very good stuff.
Really fun. You know, you pick up on the Yuletide flavors, but it's still in their general ballpark. So it's a really nice combination. It's actually a blend of Halloween and Christmas. And that's something we talk about a lot, is that intersection between those two holidays. Because basically, in some ways, they kind of run together now. Because who really pays all much attention to Thanksgiving? I mean, let's face it, the Christmas season now begins right when Halloween's over.
Yeah, it does. And, of course, Krampus is part of Halloween big time now. He's definitely in the zeitgeist of Halloween, or Christmas, rather. So that's really where it emerges. You have the Christmas demon. So
absolutely.
That's a literal
blend of the two. And then, of course, you have the Nightmare Before Christmas, which put them together in film form. And boy, that has not only retained its popularity, it seems to be more popular than ever now. Part of it's the Disney connection. And there's a lot of that at all the Disney theme parks. They have those characters, and that runs from Halloween season all the way through Christmas. So they don't even have to change it during that time frame because they do blend them together. All right, moving along past our good buds at Midnight Syndicate.
The next one is cool, but Pennywise, right? I mean, I don't want to spoil it for you to jump in, but I did catch Castle Rock on Hulu with Bill Skarsgård in it. He is as creepy without makeup as he is as Pennywise, by the way.
We haven't re-signed up to Hulu. We keep saying we're going to do that, so we will be seeing it very soon, Castle Rock, because everyone keeps saying how great it is, right? But we just don't belong at the moment, so we just got to go through, you know, you got to fill out the stuff and put in your credit card and all that crap. And we just haven't gotten around to it, because between the 1,000 channels on cable and then Netflix and then Amazon Prime, I mean,
it's almost too much.
It is not almost. It is too much. It's way too much. There's no way you could watch all these shows anymore. I see these lists. You know, I just saw a TV Guide list. The 100 best shows on TV, and it's any platform. So it's broadcast. It's over cable. It's the streaming services. And they admit at the beginning, no one person could put that list together anymore. You can't watch all 500 scripted shows on TV.
No, there's just no way.
Scripted. Yeah, that's just the scripted. Right.
There's so many good ones. Oh, so many good ones.
Yeah. See, I don't do cable. I actually have Sling TV, and I'm loving it.
How can you watch that while it's flying through the air?
I know, but it's been great because it gives you the opportunity to break up your TV viewing.
What is Sling?
Sling TV is an online TV service brought to you by Dish Network, and they own it. But it gives you all the popular channels. But what it also does is it gives you the opportunity to get instant on demand. So it's all right there for you. So if there's a show you like, and of course it might be on at 8 o'clock, but it also seamlessly puts in a playlist for you, creates that so you can watch all the shows until the new one comes on.
So HBO, Showtime, Cinemax.
Yeah, they have all that stuff. Yeah, we're really liking it. That's like what, $25 a month?
I know, it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I'm loving it.
You can afford it. You can get all the channels.
Right?
You want.
I know. I was skeptical when we switched over because at the time we were paying $200 a month for cable. And I was thinking, you know, let's give the Sling a try because a good friend of mine had switched and he says, I'm never going back. This is wonderful. And I have to agree, it is every bit as wonderful as they claim, and they give you all of the top tier channels, and you also get to pick and choose what channels you have. You don't have to be stuck with 30, you know, news channels.
Available everywhere.
Yeah, on the internet. Yeah, available everywhere. All you need is high-speed internet, and you can watch Sling. So
they should get them as a sponsor. Well, that's questionable. I'm in Chicago. It goes down all the time.
A lot of things in Chicago go down all the time.
You get a box. It's another box. You gotta get the converter.
No. For Sling, no. No?
Nope.
Goes right over any smart TV. You can watch right on your phone. You don't necessarily need a box. The only box you might need is either Amazon Fire TV or a Roku or something like that to be the medium between the two. But any of the video game systems, play it. Any of the smart TVs, play it. Anything.
Local news, you can see that?
No, unfortunately, no. You do not get local news. That's why you have to get an antenna. But almost local news outlets now stream their content as well, so you never actually have to leave. You can just get their app, and there you are.
All right, so they paid you off for that.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that was only after the check cashed.
If they haven't, they should. All right, moving along. Yes, we were talking about Pennywise, and it's just a cool infographic with some of his most kind of disgusting and appalling quotes from the film, or I guess originally from the book. So it's just, a picture, a drawing of Pennywise looking all freaky looking.
Try to stop me, I'll kill you.
In his red hair, are all these...
Kiss me, fat boy.
All these various quotes. So it's kind of cool. It's basically an image kind of thing. There's also a few other infographics. It's at costumesupercenter.com, and they do, when Halloween rolls around, they always do some cool infographics. They have one about horror films. It's just some odd and interesting facts about kind of horror in general, broadly speaking. There too that they sent me, but I like the Pennywise one the best, so that was the one that I used. All right, did you guys see American Horror Story last night?
No, I will catch it on demand.
And I have to start from the beginning because I haven't seen them. I saw like one episode ever.
That's right. You've never even seen one, period.
One
episode. I know. It just seemed kind of gross and I didn't know.
Well, it is kind of gross, let's face it.
Yeah.
Question of that, it's kind of gross. So this one, right, this is season 8. I have seen every episode of every season, and it's been up and down. I kind of buy into kind of the general critical appraisal of it. You don't really get into it for the story, typically. You don't really get into it to see what happens, because often it just ends up not making any damn sense at all. But there's really bizarre and interesting characters, A, and B, you just get these amazing moments. It's a show about moments, almost like set pieces, right? And you just go, wow, that was something, both visually and conceptually. I still say at this point, the very first season, which was Murder House, was the most successful, I think, as an actual TV show.
It had Dylan McDermott in it. That was a lot.
Dylan McDermott. It had a plot you could follow. It you couldn't believe it when things went bad. I honestly was truly upset because I was invested in those characters, and when things went bad, oh boy, they went bad. It turns really horrific, and that one was the most powerful. I am thinking, it's only been one episode, this all the way now, we're all the way up to season 8. This season may be the best since that very first
season.
Really?
Well, that's saying something.
I like Cup 2. That was 3.
Hotel was good. 3 was good. Roanoke, if you haven't seen the series, don't even start on that one. I mean, my opinion, it might be something you like, but me, it never really tickled, didn't trip my switch at all. It was just kind of too meta. Way too meta.
Meta upon meta upon meta. Yeah. By the end. I liked a lot of it, but by the end, it was just so convoluted. I couldn't even figure out what was going on.
Yeah, and American Horror Story is one of those shows where the sum is worth more than its parts. Yeah, I mean.
I agree. I truly agree with that. So anyway, this first episode, first of all, the name of this season is Apocalypse. Well, you don't know what that's going to be. It's literally about the nuclear apocalypse.
Oh, wow.
So that caught everyone off guard. No one knew that was coming. You see literally the end of the world, and there are very few survivors, and it's what's going on with them. How do they survive? What are they going to do? And what's the interaction between these survivors? And it's off to an amazing start. It was more like what I would call normal storytelling than any season since
I'll check that out tomorrow.
Actual storytelling. It wasn't nearly as arch and as self-referential as it often is. You know, it's almost like a self-parody sometimes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It gets so extreme and so self-referential. This is like you're starting from scratch, which is ironic because this season is supposed to be a blend, some kind of mashup of Murder House and Coven.
That's how they sold it. I'm
sure we will see all those characters.
Yeah.
But so far, none of them. This was starting completely different set of characters. We knew many of the actors, but it was new roles, new characters, nothing we've seen before, and in this horrific setting. And it's very frightening. I mean, it's like, wow, that really could happen, you know?
You know, one thing, though, as I'm sitting here and I'm hearing you talk about the show and looking at all the tweets we have, I notice it's lacking any Walking Dead buzz. Normally, by this time of the year, traditionally, we've been ramping up for the release of The Walking Dead. I don't see any release.
Way down. Way, way down. Every time I tweet about it, you know, some update, they're announcing new actors and new characters and this and that. And, of course, there was the whole big thing about, you know, we have two really pivotal key characters leaving. Mm-hmm. Everyone has, you know, that's not a secret. This season, one way or another, we don't know how they're leaving, but we know they're leaving. And every time I've tweeted about it this season, very little response. Very little response. Really weird. Much more response for Fear the Walking Dead, which I think now is a much better show than
Walking
Dead.
This season of Fear the Walking Dead is fantastic. I mean, really, really good. A huge leap forward for them. And part of it is they brought over some characters from The Walking Dead.
Well, Morgan, he was a great character in The Walking Dead, that actor, and he really added a lot to Fear the Walking Dead.
Oh, he's fantastic. So really good. The characters are these are the best storytelling. I think it's the most interesting characters. It's the best acting. That has turned into a really, really good show, and I will be surprised if I like and feel more involved with The Walking Dead this season than I have been with Fear the Walking Dead. If you would have told me that even, 2 years ago, I'd have said you're nuts.
A good friend of mine is somewhat of a, he does the screeners for these shows. Or I shouldn't say good friend, but one of my sources that gives me some inside track on shows because he gets to see them long before we do as a critic. And I kind of asked him, hey, you know, he does the Hollywood Reporter thing. I said, well, what do you think about The Walking Dead? He says, let's just say it's dead on arrival.
Wow.
Is what he said. And they just left it right there. He did not even really anything positive to say, because other times in the past I've asked him and he's, wow, yeah, that was a great, look for it. It's going to be awesome. This year is more, it's The Walking Dead.
Looking back now that we have a little bit of space, not that the show's over, it's not, but looking at this, everyone has noticed decline in popularity and buzz. By any measurement, it goes back to the death of Glenn.
Yeah, it does. It does. Some would say even goes back to the death of Sean, because a lot of people would have been curious what he would have done with Negan, how he would have dealt with it.
Right.
So and then the death, of course, of Carl. Which he still's living on as we speak in the comic books.
Right. That was
weird.
For a lot of people, you know, the door started closing with the death of Glenn and it shut with the death of Carl.
That was really about that took the wind out of the sails. But hey, you just never know. You just never know. It might be surprisingly good. It might resonate with the fans.
But they're being reincarnated in the future in Star Trek, so maybe there's a new life for them after all.
Maybe. That could be it. And they could come back and say, Girl.
So
the tweet about American Horror Story, just back to that real quick, is I'm just referencing a story, basically a review, more or less a review, saying about what I've said and feeling about the way I do. I kind of agree. And lots of cool images and some videos. So just check that out. That's the tweet about American Horror Story. Which season 8 Apocalypse began last night. All right, have you heard the story about this 10-year-old boy who fell out of a tree because he was being chased by wasps? He landed, his face landed, why was a meat skewer sticking up out of the ground?
Wow, that sounds like a setup to me, but okay.
It went through his face. Look at the
Oh my God.
Is that in his nose?
I think it's to the side.
That poor boy.
Click through. Click on the link, and then you see him post-surgery.
Oh,
and you can see
God.
Where the hole was. It's on the side.
Oh,
it's
just that to poor the kid.
Look at that kid.
Oh, my and God. He's smiling. Yeah.
Not only was it not fatal, but they expect a full recovery.
That is amazing. That is amazing.
This metal spike went through all the way through his flipping head.
I'm looking at this kid. He's happy. You know, he's lucky he's only 10. I would not recover from that at my age.
No. Well, you know what? When they say full recovery, it's not true because, like, I've had some of these patients, and they've got numbness. They've got crazy pain. They've got, you know, that's not a full recovery. You're not brand new. You still hurt, and you still have side effects.
So it's a full recovery, but kind of situation.
They survived. That's it.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Miss Occupational Therapist.
For real. It's so irritating. I'm like, oh, they had a full recovery. I'm like, she's got buckshot still in her body that are killing her.
Yeah, that is not a full recovery.
I would agree. You are right.
That is survival.
Some might say that's semantics, but no, I agree with you. I think you're right.
Some people wish they ended it then because they're in so much agony. Yeah. Oh, full recovery. Mm.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, the image that we tweeted is of the x-ray, and it shows this poor kid's head from the side with this big metal spike right through his head.
My God, that poor kid.
It's amazing.
Whoever left that out in the yard, though, they should be a stern talking to because this poor kid.
Strongly worded letters.
Something.
I'm sure
something.
It was left out there for Tom of Tom and Jerry.
All right, moving along. Boy, is this the year of Halloween or what? So we know we got the new one, which they are pretending is the first sequel to the original 40 years later. And now it's been announced that the original, it has been restored and remastered into 4K, and it's going to be in theaters on September 27th. The original Halloween.
The Halloween.
Right next to Smokey and the Bandit, too.
That's coming back to theaters as well?
They're releasing it for, you know, in honor of good old Bert.
So they're re-releasing Halloween in 4K on the 27th? Oh, my God. I got to get to the theater during that time.
Yeah,
because I was too young to see it in all its glory during its original run, because I was born in the 70s, early 70s, so or mid 70s. So
definitely too young for it. That's for sure.
It's too young
at the time.
Yes,
you were four.
I was four. I was
probably
4 years
too young for
it. It was probably too young. Yeah, I'm not sure my parents would have let me go see it at 4 years old. Pretty sure.
I'm hoping not. No. Moving along, speaking of remakes, although they're making a huge point of saying, this is not a remake.
I see that. It's not a remake. Don't worry.
New Pet Sematary film, not a remake, a first film, is much closer to the Stephen King book, so says the filmmaker. I love that art, though. Look at the poster.
Well, the first one was great, man. The first one was good.
It was. It was pretty classic.
You know, so.
And it was frightening. It was. Certainly for its time.
It had everything. It had the guy from Munsters going, you know, you don't want to bury that there. They don't seem to stay dead.
Fred Gwynn. Yeah. Good old Fred. Yep. Herman Munster himself. Yeah, very different role for him. He was actually a very good actor. He was in a lot of things. Remember he was in My Cousin Vinny? He was the judge?
He was.
With a southern accent? Yes.
Oh. He was. He was the judge, and that was also a good movie. Yeah. It's a great movie. Well, I look forward to seeing the new Pet Sematary.
Yep, it's coming out.
The remake. The remake of Pet Sematary.
Yeah. The remake that's not a remake.
Yeah, exactly.
Coming out in 2019. All right, the next one's purely an image. It's a very autumnal scene with a tree with the leaves turned orange and red. And we have a classic ghost figure in front of it, clutching at his or her midsection. And it's another case of afterlife indigestion.
Too much candy. I had too much candy.
I'm patting myself on the back. I crack myself up. I got it.
You really should. That's pretty ingenious.
Oh, I love this one even better. This is one of my better captions of all time. So check out the chair. All right. So it's a picture. The next one. And remember, you can see all these pictures. Twitter.com/AMHaunted. All you got to do. You don't have to belong to Twitter. If you do, it's even better. But you can see all the pictures. You can follow the links.
Yeah. It'd be cool if you did.
It'd be super cool if you didn't follow us and retweet us and like us and do whatever you want. All right. So we have a chair in the form of a seated skeleton. So his arms are the arms of the chair. And then there's skulls where his hands are. And then the back of the chair is his upper body, his torso, and his skull. So that's your chair. It's a...
It would be bone chilling to sit in.
Yep. Ah,
yes.
Frighten me to the bone.
And what is the caption? It's a bone throne.
Oh, man.
I like that.
I love that. I was patting myself on the back for
hours. Groan. Yeah.
Hours after that. I just go back and just chuckle.
Well, someone's got to do it, right?
Bone throne. Yeehaw.
I like
All right, this next one is Shag. Do you know the artist Shag, who I love? He does the kind of everything's kind of bachelor patty. It's all got that 60s retro kind of feel to it. And he's got a whole series on the classic Universal Monsters. I just love this one. It just cracks me up. We got bachelor pad mummy here. You know, he's got a dancing girl server there with his martini, and he's got his finger up, and he's in his lounge chair.
He's living that the afterlife.
He is living the afterlife, that bachelor pad mummy. And there's the Shag. I don't know if it's a museum or it's just a gal. I guess it's a gallery. My brother just went there the other day. And he had a bunch of pictures up.
Really? Very cool.
Yeah, I got to get there. It's in, I believe it's in the Palm Springs area because that's where he lives. So I got to get there because I love Shag. It just cracks me up. I love the whole kind of tiki, you know, bachelor pad mentality. That 50s, 60s kind of feel, that retro feel of something that never was, which is the
Shag-a-licious.
Best. Exactly. Shaggle. All right. We got time for a couple more. Oh, my. Look at this next one.
Oh, my God.
Poor Lucy.
It is one of my favorites. That's one of the favorites I have seen in a long time.
That's her 10 cents.
And he looks so happy and full of
glee. Oh, my God. He's thrilled. Finally gets that kickoff. So we all know about Lucy. Always.
Poor Lucy's decapitated.
Yeah, this time Charlie Brown, instead of kicking the football, which of course never happens, or kicking the air and falling on his head, which is what usually happens as she pulls the football away, this time he kicks her head off.
It could almost be a trailer for Hereditary, because that's the same thing that happens to all of them. They lose their heads.
Oh, my God. Much. So anyway, it's hilarious. It really looks like the Chuck Schultz style. It looks like it's a real panel, you know, from a Peanuts comic or one of the TV specials, but it's Charlie Brown kicking Lucy's head right off.
We got 1 minute, Eric. Time for one more.
All right, super quick. We're back to Pennywise. I love this. You can't see the caption. You can't see the caption until you click on the picture. So my caption is The Perils of Pennywise. But when you click on it, it's Pennywise, the old Pennywise. It's Tim Curry. And he's standing under an umbrella. Obviously, it's a break from filming, but he's still in character. He's got a cigarette coming out of his mouth.
He looks like the defeated Pennywise. Where did
he looks
wrong?
Very defeated. He's got this umbrella. He's like, I'm killing Tiger.
I just got to tell you, when I first scrolled down, that R looked like an N, and I'm like, why did he put that?
No.
It just... didn't look like perils, that's all I'm gonna say.
Okay, okay. I got you.
The original, I didn't write this. This is the original caption, says, "Damn hurricane flooded my sewer." And boy, does he look dejected.
Well, on that note, we got to get out of here. When we come back, we're going to be talking about all things witchcraft, all things haunted Halloween, the history of Halloween. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back right after this.
Hi, Tom Baudet. If you can hear me, then you have an internet connection, which means you can do cool things online, like listen to streaming radio, obviously, or watch a video of a monkey washing a cat. Let your freak flag fly. Or you can book a room at a great price at Motel6.com. Isn't the internet wonderful? Everything you want right at your fingertips and, whoa, did not need to see that. I'm Tom Baudet for Motel 6, and we'll leave the light on for you.
Unexpected reactions to smart financial decisions brought to you by FeedThePig.org.
Well, I finally did it. My student loan is totally paid off.
I can't believe it.
I can't believe it either. I paid more than the minimum each month, and soon enough, it was gone.
So you're just giving up?
Giving up on what?
The life of luxury. Egyptian cotton, caviar Thursdays, designer everything.
What are you talking about?
Our plan. What happened to winning the lottery and mastering the art of the perfect mimosa? Hosting galas, wearing enough jewelry to require a bodyguard, vacationing in the French Riviera and then buying it.
I just thought maybe it was time to prepare for my future. You know, set some financial goals, make some smart investments, open a 401k.
Financial goals? Investments? A 401k? You are horrifying right now. Listen, if winning the lottery were easy, everyone would do it.
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Northern Tool and Equipment.
So me and the boys head out to tailgate today and find some other fans in our spot.
Well, it happens.
Cheering for the wrong team.
Oh, this is war.
Even worse, they've got this couch set up and everything.
A couch?
Yeah, it's sectional.
All right, first thing, don't ever use the word sectional again.
Done.
Second, I want you to grab a 4,700-pound tow chain with J-hook and grab hammer. Throw that on the back of your truck.
Got it.
Now you're going to Hail Mary the J-hook over the end of that couch. Time to find a better spot for your new friends.
That should do it.
There's no problem a little horsepower can't solve. Northern Tool and Equipment.
Taking a family of five to the amusement park can cost a small fortune.
Oh, yeah. So to save some money, we thought, hey, let's bring the amusement park to us. Yeah. Go ahead.
All right. Step right up. Step right up, young man. Are you ready to ride the Wacky Waterfall?
That's just the bathtub with the shower head running.
Nope, it's the Wacky Waterfall.
It's the shower, Dad.
Waterfall.
Wacky.
There's an easier way to save. To get a free rate quote, go to Geico.com. Then buy online, over the phone, or at your local Geico office.
Green light. Hey, girl. School zone. I'm getting hungry. Car changing lanes. You want to meet me for pizza? Stop sign. Intersection clear. Yeah, street. Pizza sounds good. Ball in street? Girl in street!
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text, stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And welcome back to After Hours AM, everybody. I'm your host, Joel Sturgis. Right along with me,
Eric Olson and
Heidi Hollis.
And tonight we are really blessed to have Mickey Mueller. Mueller on with us. I almost did the Mueller because you mentioned the guy that's doing that whole thing in Washington. Kind of threw me off there for a minute. But here we are. And we are talking tonight about the Little Book of Halloween. And it's going to be a great show. But I'm going to step aside like I always do and let the best intro man in the world take the reins.
Oh, shucks. Llewellyn's Little Book of Halloween is a breezy pocket-sized book that shares everything you need to know to celebrate the ancient festival when the veil between this world and the next is at its thinnest. Filled with crafts, recipes, spells, tutorials, this little gem will help you make the most out of this special time of year. Explore how Halloween has been celebrated throughout history, from harvest festivals and the Celtic New Year through All Souls Day and trick-or-treating. Discover decor ideas for the home and garden, and learn how cats, bats, ghosts, skeletons, and other popular symbols became associated with Halloween. This book is a must-have for those who love Halloween or want to see the season from a witch's point of view. Who is our author? It's Mickey Mueller. Who is Mickey Mueller? She explores magic and spirituality through art and the written word. She's the author, illustrator of The Voice of the Trees, author of The Witch's Mirror and the brand new Llewellyn's Book of Halloween, obviously. She was also the illustrator of Magical Dogs, Mystical Cats, Tarot, and The Well-Worn Path, and The Hidden Path Oracle Dex. In addition, since 2007, Mickey has been a regular article and illustration contributor to Llewellyn's annual almanacs and datebooks, as well as many other Llewellyn books. Her mixed media artwork is created magically. I want to hear about this. She combines colored pencil technique and paint infused with magical herbs corresponding to the subject, bringing the power of spirit into her artwork. Her art has been seen as set dressing on Sci-Fi's The Magicians and Bravo's Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce. Mickey is a longtime contributor to her local alternative faith community and has studied natural magic, Celtic tradition, and has taught magic and folklore in the St. Louis pagan community. She is also a Reiki master and teacher, ordained priestess, and loyal minion to a cat and a dog. Welcome to the program, Mickey Mueller.
Hi, everybody.
Hey,
thank
Mickey.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. Very, very interesting stuff. We love Halloween around these parts, and especially the history of Halloween always gets me. And we're kind of I'm looking at this book, and I've been kind of thumbing through it digitally for a better part of the day. There, you kind of take us all the way through. I mean, there you go every nook and cranny about Halloween, and that's really cool. And if you are a big fan of Halloween and you're listening, go check that book out right now. Amazon's got it. Llewellyn's got it, of course, Llewellyn Worldwide. Big shout out to them for being a big supporter of the show. Check it out. It's the Little Book of Halloween. But as we're talking, I'm looking at it, and I'm really curious of what is the real history of Halloween. We hear lots of different theories on it, but when did this holiday actually get its start?
Well, it is. It's a really rich history. And the truth is, nobody knows for sure how old the root of Halloween is, because it goes all the way back to an old Celtic holiday called Samhain, which modern witches celebrate now, but it goes way back.
I had a Samhain for dinner.
Wow. Oh, yes.
A Caesar Samhain.
Yeah, it was Caesar Samhain.
I love a good Caesar salmon. Yeah, it's pronounced Samhain, but it's spelled Samhain, the way that they say it in the movie Halloween, which don't ever say it that way. But we love John Carpenter anyway. It's a pronounced Samhain, and you can have it with or without ranch dressing.
Yeah. The option is there for all you conscious people.
The option is there. Croutons, if you know you're not going gluten free. It goes way back to the ancient British Isles. You know, we know it existed as far as the medieval texts, like the Irish Book of Invasions, is where we know it from, where we have evidence of this holiday being celebrated. It was actually back then. It was a 3-day holiday. They did that a lot.
They knew how to party.
You know, they were hunter gatherers, or they were going into the agricultural times. So when they partied,
partied hardy is what they did.
Yeah.
Feasting, yeah. Bonfires.
Probably orgy or two.
Probably. We don't know for sure. We don't have any evidence of that, but we don't have any evidence that there wasn't.
Well, you can't let the Romans outdo you is what I'm saying.
Yeah, true. That's right. So yeah, it was a huge festival, and yeah, there was drinking and feasting and bonfires, and they did a lot of divination because they were going into the dark time of the year when there wasn't going to be as much food and things were going to get really tough. You know, stuff got real when you didn't have a grocery store and a car and during the winter. So yeah, people wanted to know what was going to happen. So they did a lot of divination during that time. People paid their taxes. They settled debts. They remembered their loved ones as well. So it was a harvest festival, but it was also the Celtic New Year. And it was also a time to think about the people who had passed.
It was a time of fear, wasn't it?
Definitely a time of fear, yeah.
Because they didn't know if they were actually going to survive. I mean, they had to go through this long, cold winter on what they'd harvested, and they had no idea, truly. There was no weatherman going, mm-hmm. Here's the prediction for this winter. So they didn't know what they were facing. So they were truly scared. They're a scared bunch of folks.
Scared by the real world and scared by the supernatural as well, because this was a time of the year that we call now the thin veil. Mm-hmm. There's two times of the year, two hinges that the year hinges on, and it's the time that falls directly in between the autumn equinox and the winter solstice, and that's when the celebration would have happened. And basically, these are the times of the year when we consider the veil between the physical world that we live in and the world of spirits is at its thinnest. So those spirits are able to come across more easily. And they were worried about things like the spirits of the land, what we call fairies. And, you know, these weren't like, you know, fairies with glitter and sunshine and rainbows. These were scary fairies. These were the kind of fairies that will drag you down to their world. And by the time you come back, all your family's gone and dead, and all kinds of weird stuff. There's all kinds
changeling.
Of
changeling.
I was about to say that. Changelings are something that things they feared like that. As well.
Mm-hmm. And revenant spirits and all this. So yeah, people were nervous. So what they did was they would wear weird clothes. Sometimes they would turn their clothes inside out. They would paint their faces, perhaps wear masks, and they would. That's the way that they would travel during the celebration of Samhain, to protect them from these spirits of the land so that they wouldn't be recognized. Or they might look at them and say, they look really strange. They might be one of ours. We won't mess with them.
Or they might be scared of them because it would be a vampire. Maybe they'd be like, oh, I don't want to mess with that thing.
Yeah. Sounds like one of my sisters. But Well, that's interesting. It makes sense. It's like, oh, I can understand the thinking of those times.
Definitely.
My understanding, I've done a fair amount of research because I, like you, Mickey, I'm just fascinated with Halloween, kind of holidays in general. And of course, the two biggest are Halloween and Christmas, obviously.
Yes.
And there's an intersection even between them. And we talk about that periodically, too. That's interesting. But my understanding is the earliest what we think of as jack-o'-lanterns were actually turnips because they didn't have pumpkins.
Right.
The British Isles. So do you know when that tradition began and what's behind that? Why were people creating little jack-o'-lanterns out of turnips?
Right. Well, and that's the thing. We're not really sure how far back the turnip jack-o'-lanterns go. They may go all the way back to Samhain, but there's not a lot of records because the old Celts did not have written records. They had an oral tradition that the Druids would carry on. So there are some things we don't know. All we know about is what was written or what we find through archaeological evidence.
To the best of your guess, though, what was the reasoning behind the jack-o'-lantern? What purpose did it serve?
I can guess that perhaps it was meant to usher the spirits of the of their loved ones back. That's one of the ways that people
What would the headless horseman wear? I mean, really.
Right. Oh, there's actually an interesting story about the Headless Horseman. We always assume that's a jack-o'-lantern, but if you go back and read the original story, mm-hmm. it's just a pumpkin, because jack-o'-lanterns hadn't become popular in the United States around the time that book was written. And the original illustrations, it's just a pumpkin as well.
Nah, so it's not a full-fledged jack-o'-lantern. It was probably Disney that brought us that one.
It actually came a little bit, well, it came earlier than that. By the time that people in America, when the Irish came over, they brought over the tradition of the jack-o'-lantern, and among a lot of other traditions that we associate with Halloween today. And, of course, turnips are a pain in the butt to try to carve. And they found that we had these fantastic, great, big orange pumpkins that were hollow already. And so that started. And illustrators, back when they were illustrating the Sleepy Hollow, they had seen the jack-o'-lanterns and are like, oh, this makes sense. Let's illustrate it like that. And so there are early illustrations that show a jack-o'-lantern, but the very first illustrations show a pumpkin. So that book was written right about the crux of that time when Halloween was just starting to become a little bit more popular in America.
How big of a pain, though, Mickey, was it to write this book? I mean, you go through all this. I mean, how long did this thing take?
You wouldn't even believe it. I literally got the news that I was writing this book in September of last year, and my deadline was in December.
No pressure.
You were told.
I lived and breathed Halloween. But you know what? It's okay, because I've half of it was already written in my head. As soon as he said, do you want to write this book? I'm like, oh my gosh. I was brimming full of ideas. I actually had to edit it down.
Oh, wow.
This is what I do. Because I had so many ideas. It wasn't a matter of trying to pump it up more. It was like, I have a word count, you know, because they're very small books. Sure. So, I mean, I really packed everything I could about Halloween into this book. The cool thing was, when you write seasonal articles or books, you don't always get to write them in the season. Mm-hmm. But because of the way this one timed out, I literally got to start right about the time that all the Halloween stuff was hitting the shelves, and we were all starting to think about, oh, you know, what our costumes are going to be, and getting our decorations out. So I got to write it in the midst of all that, and it really helped. It was a great inspiration.
I bet, immersed into the holiday and you're writing about it, so it really made it easy.
Yeah, you got 2 months. Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. You know, another thing, historically, of course, and folklore wise, I'm also with the various symbols of Halloween. I know you addressed that, so love to hear your thoughts and some of the background on the famous Halloween symbols and where they came from.
Oh gosh, yeah. You know, and it's really interesting, because so many of these symbols, we think that they're just used because they're kind of scary looking. But there's really magical reasons for all of these symbols to be used. The one that pops first into my mind is the black cat. We always associate a black cat with Halloween. And we think it's because of the superstitions about cats being bad luck and all these things. But no, it actually goes way back, again, to the old Irish and Celtic folklore. There's a cat spirit known as a caitchí, which is this very large black cat with a little white tuft right on its chest. And this spirit, some people thought that it could turn into a witch. Huh. But it could only do it, or it was a witch that it could only turn into a cat. There's two different versions of it. Mm. But it would do it 9 times, and that's where we get the 9 lives that a cat has.
Interesting. So, see, I own a black cat.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that cool or what? We can bring that into modern times. If you put a saucer of milk out on Halloween for the catchy, this spirit would come through and enjoy the milk. And then you would have good luck all year, because you've been kind to this interesting kind of fearsome fairy spirit. You want them on your side. You don't want them against you.
I learned my lesson about keeping your black cats in during Halloween, though, because people really abuse them.
They do.
We keep ours in the home as well because, you know, we worry, and he's kind of an elderly cat.
Halloween especially, though. My cat would go in and out all year round, but Halloween one time she came back with half her teeth missing, like somebody kicked her.
Oh, yeah. Poor
like
kitty.
Somebody kicked
That's
her.
Awful.
It was,
That's
and
awful.
She was missing for a couple weeks. I'm like, you know, she must have, I don't know, probably got a little amnesia, and then she finally came back, and I'm like, oh my God, what happened? You know, it was bad.
Oh my gosh, I bet you were terrified while she was missing. It's terrible.
Oh, yeah.
It's awful.
We got a black cat as well. His name is Blackness. Yeah, it's one
I
of
like
those
that.
Names. And
creative.
Yeah, right. Really, really creative. But the kids love him. Great cat. But you know, same thing. We worry about him going out during that time of year because of that whole thing that does happen. And of course, if it drops below, you know, 40 degrees outside, he stays inside anyway. He's a big wimp.
Yeah,
like the cold. So that works perfect for him.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's important to note for people too that you know, the people that you're worrying about harming black cats during Halloween, those aren't witches, man.
No, they're just mean people.
Those are just mean people because all the witches I know, we love our animals, and we love stray animals. We would never hurt.
Yeah.
And in fact, there was a wonderful event that used to take place in St. Louis. We haven't had one in a while, but they called it the St. Louis Witches Ball, and it was a pagan event. And they always raised money for a cat shelter called Clouder House.
Come on!
Yeah.
Wow!
How cool is that?
That is very cool.
I was going to ask you. You called like Wicca to be an alternative religion. What else gets tossed into that category of as being an alternative religion? I find it interesting. I never heard it called that.
Well, because it's not as mainstream, you know. There's a lot of people that still are weirded out by it, and it's like,
no,
you guys, it's
kidding.
Not really that weird. Well, I live in the Bible Belt, so.
Oh wow! You live to tell a story.
Yeah, I do. So you would be surprised how many people around here are much more open than you might think and less judgy. So times are changing.
That's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
Yeah,
I
like the book because it's part history and part Pinterest.
It totally is.
you have things that can build, like witch's brew bottles and mini pumpkin tea light holders and doorway guards and soul cakes, you name it.
Stuff that I do. You know what it comes from, you guys? It comes from being broke because I'm an artist and an author and we're always broke. So I've always come up with ways to do a lot of DIY Halloween stuff because I go to the big box stores and I look at all the stuff on the shelves and I'm like, oh, I want all of it. And then I go home and I figure out a way to make it.
Yes, I know exactly where you're coming from. My wife and I will hit the aisle for Halloween. Her eyes glaze over with glee.
Oh my gosh!
When the things come out, and because that's her favorite holiday, and so
glee only comes out at Christmas. Come on now.
Well, no, for her it is true glee. It she really loves the Halloween. I do as well.
Halloween glee is a real thing.
It really is. It really is. Yep. Yeah. And well, Mickey, do you have a website where people can look at your stuff and other books and stuff like that?
I do. I have an Etsy shop. It's Mickey Mueller Studio on Etsy. That's the easiest way to find all of my stuff because I've got galleries full of my art. I've got all of my books there. Well, right now I don't have the Halloween book because it's a blessing, but the thing keeps selling out.
Well, that is a blessing. And also, Mickey Mueller. blogspot.com, right? You got that
as
well.
I have a blog over there that I've been neglecting, I'm just ashamed to say, but I think it's time to pick it up again.
It looks cool though. I was clicking through one, especially in a lot of the art stuff and the shop and stuff like that. Very, very cool, well put together blog.
Yeah, and there's a lot of step-by-step of the art there too, so if people are interested to see how I create the magical art, it's on the blog. So
yeah, I bet go ahead.
I like to cartoon and write books too, so I feel you. But I went and I finished up with college. I was starting off as an art major, and it's like my parents were in my head, you can always do your art on the side. I'm like, okay, fine.
So get a real job, then do your art.
Yeah, so I became a therapist, and it supports my art. And now they're like, can't you just be a therapist and be happy? I'm like, no, I have to do it all. I have to do it all. I'm sorry.
The art because is- art feeds your soul, doesn't it?
It does. I can't stop. Yeah. I can't stop it.
You shouldn't stop. It's okay. It's good that you're doing therapy, though. But, you know, you've got to do the art, or you need therapy. I know that's how I feel.
Therapize thine self.
I know, right?
I incorporate the art into the therapy because I am an occupational therapist. So I work with hands and, you know, people have been injured. So, yeah.
That's so wonderful because art is healing. It really is.
I love it. It's fun.
I do. Oh, so, I'm so happy for you. That's fantastic.
Not to be prosaic or to go backwards, but I'd love to hear any more. You want to talk about just any more symbols? Maybe a couple more.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Background
absolutely.
On them just because it's fun and I it's so interesting to think about because, like you were saying, you know, we just kind of think of them as having appeared.
Well,
you know?
I have a question about a symbol, though, that someone's asking. Is the pentagram truly evil or is that something we only think is evil?
It's not evil, in fact. The pentagram is a symbol that represents the four elements of earth, air, fire, and water. Those are the lower points. And the top point represents spirit. So spirit.
Well, I'm going to draw one on my floor right now, then.
Yeah. Yes, definitely do
that. Put some candles around
salt.
It.
No.
Here we go.
Get
those
some candles.
Always found in the haunted houses. Come on now.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's this thing that I like to call album cover Satanists. I remember them from back in the day, you know, back in the
80s.
The panics. These are just people who've like watched too many horror movies and they listen to all their records backwards. And then they go out to the cemetery and they're not really studying magic. They're just kind of playing around.
Doesn't everybody do that? I guess I was alone in doing that. Oh,
no, you weren't. I was doing that too.
Oh, okay.
No. I'm sure we've all listened to Led Zeppelin backwards.
Absolutely. That was required. I mean, that was a rite of passage.
Yeah. It's true. It's totally true.
Black Sabbath, obviously.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. The pentagram.
I'm sorry, I didn't do it.
You never did. You got to do it. You know, it's online on YouTube, you know. You don't even have to go through that much anymore.
Oh, you don't have to sit there with the record player and spin it with your finger?
Exactly. The old days, I knew a guy that he should have he was a pothead, but he should have became an engineer because he built a turntable that only go backwards. He ripped it open and redid it.
Come on.
That's all it would do.
Oh, he meant business.
He did, and that was just so he could play the Led Zeppelin in its entirety backwards.
Backwards. Oh my gosh,
that's true dedication right there.
He meant business.
He meant business in between making bongs, and he
that
decided,
is one extended headache,
right?
Oh my lord.
I don't want to hear the whole album backwards.
No,
I don't want to hear a whole song backwards. A sentence or two is fine.
He's like, sit down, man.
He's jammed to some Led Zeppelin forwards.
Yeah. You go in there and he'd be like, this is cool going forwards, but watch this. It's going to go backwards. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it's on YouTube now?
Yeah,
what
you can.
That we live in. That's amazing.
You can YouTube the whole album backwards. Anything you want backwards.
Thoughts are backwards on YouTube.
You know, that you can watch people on YouTube do Bloody Mary. They got that going on. So
I actually talk about that in The Witch's Mirror.
Yeah, we're going to get to that right after the break because I'd like to dive a little bit into that side of things. So that's a perfect segue into that. When we come back after break, we're going to talk a little bit about that kind of stuff, where the Bloody Mary came from, where that kind of stuff ultimately came from. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back right after this.
Northern
Northern Tool and Equipment.
So Daddy's little girl thinks she's going to prom tonight with some punk who calls himself Snake.
Yeah, they grow up so fast.
Well, not if I can help it, they don't.
Okay, here's what you do. When that kid shows up, Dad's going to be doing a few chores around the house.
Huh?
It doesn't matter the chore. What's important is that it requires the use of a 60cc gas-powered chainsaw and possibly a mask.
I think it's showtime.
He's here. Dad, I want you to meet.
All right, let her rip.
What's that, honey? Hi, Snake. Great to meet you. But wait, where are you going?
There's no problem a little horsepower can't solve. Northern Tool and Equipment.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
My backyard.
Oh, your backyard. Try telling a bear that.
I did, and this bear talked back.
Talking bear, that's rich.
No, wait, it was Smokey Bear.
Smokey?
Why didn't you say so?
I did say so.
Continue.
I was burning yard waste.
No, boy.
He told me to burn legally and responsibly, and to remember that if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
And as always, he's right.
You know, 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Yeah, I know that now.
Thanks to me.
Actually, thanks to Smokey.
As usual, the talking bear gets all the credit.
Get your Smokey on. Always burn responsibly and contact your local fire department for open burning regulations. Because 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
And welcome back to After Hours AM. I'm your host, Joel Sturgis, right along with me,
Eric Olson and
Heidi Hollis.
And tonight we're talking with Mickey Mueller, and she wrote probably the coolest little Halloween book, and it is little. It's like pocket size. I mean that literally. That is Llewellyn's Little Book of Halloween, and she's the author of that cool book. And it takes you through the history of Halloween and also some crafting ideas, which I was surprised to see the crafting ideas in the Halloween book, but it was refreshing at the same time because now I truly do know how to make a ghoul punch.
That's right.
and a witch's
things you need to know.
Yes, and a witch's herb bottles and all that kind of good stuff. So it really, and the pumpkin carving 101. I mean, I had no idea I was doing it wrong all these years, but hey, it was worth reading that. So when we were leaving, we're kind of touching upon the Bloody Mary myth. Where does that come from? Because that thing's been around forever.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really old one. And we all did it, you know, back when I was a kid in the 70s. That was like everybody, we went and got in front of the mirror. And for people that don't know, you know, you go in, there's different methods. But the way we did it was you'd go in the bathroom, turn all the lights off with a candle, and you'd just say, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary. And sometimes you turn around or sometimes you don't, but you say that. And what happens is you get yourself all worked up because mm-hmm. you're expecting to see this really scary face. And then you look in the mirror and what you're seeing is your own freaked out, contorted face looking back at you, scared to death. And then, like, you know, 12 preteen girls go screaming, bursting through the bathroom door, screaming through the house.
You know, and some would say what you're doing with it is you're creating a psychomantium.
Yeah.
When you're doing that.
Oh, yeah. The psychomantium was a really neat thing. It's goes back to Victorians, and they used a mirror for spirit communication. They would have a whole room, basically, and it was clothed in black fabric, draped all around. And all that would be was you and the chair and the mirror. And they would angle the mirror in such a way that you would have to tip the chair back on, like, the two legs. It was like, so the whole thing was kind of thrown off kilter.
Yeah.
You're looking, gazing into this mirror, and you were supposed to be able to see spirits or communicate with spirits.
I tried it once. I was at an event, and they had a psychomantium, and I went in
really?
There. I did. Oh. And it was
I'm
the
jealous.
Weirdest thing that I had ever seen. It was the oddest thing. You know, number one, the flickering candle with the angles gonna make your eyes play tricks on self. I mean, that
totally.
I totally got the science behind it. I wasn't necessarily a believer, but I did see some strange things that I cannot explain. Like at one point I looked in the mirror and I looked like I was 90 years old in my eye.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of that could have been the angle and the flicker of the light. I mean, there's a lot going on with that. But yeah, there's some strange things going on.
Wow, now I understand what inspired the way I decorated my bedroom growing up.
Did you make yourself a psychomantium and lived in it? Then you wonder why the shadow people showed up going, hey.
I'm just kidding.
Every other week, they're calling an old priest and a young priest.
Yeah, I need an old priest, young priest, a chick that likes to puke up soup. I need this thing out of here.
I saw an episode of Oprah where she went into, on stage, into a black box that was with a mirror, and it was completely black, and she went inside live on the show.
Wow.
And came out totally changed, and like, that changed my life. She was going into details on it, and I have tried to find that episode again, and
it's on YouTube. Not out there. It's on YouTube.
You've seen it? I have not been able to find it.
It's on YouTube. YouTube, Oprah goes in the black box.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Everybody's going to be watching it.
That's fantastic. For the longest time, but not recently. So that's awesome.
I know the clip you speak of, and if it is still on YouTube, that was what you had to type to get to. Oprah goes in the black box, or what have you, something in that order. And I did see that she came out truly turned, like really had a revelation. It wasn't like pretending; like she was completely changed.
I'm not surprised. Mirror work is some very. It's really life-changing stuff. There's a lot of self work, shadow work that you can do with mirrors that can really change your life. And you know, it's amazing. And when I wrote the book, The Witch's Mirror, I learned so much. I wrote about a lot of things that I was already doing, and then I did a lot of research and learned so many more things that I was able to incorporate. I'm still coming up with new ways to use mirrors and magic.
You know, but here's the deal, Mickey. I mean, it's like any other thing. There's things, you know, it's like a hammer. We can either hit our hands or build a house. Yep. So everything has the evil side, like the mirror. Yes. I've heard people using that for bad as well.
Absolutely. Well, and that was one of the reasons I was excited to write the book, because I had read things and heard things that other magic users were like, oh, no, I don't do mirror magic. And I actually started doing mirror magic when I was a young broke witch, and I didn't have a lot of money. I was a single mom, and I was using basically what I had in my home, you know, and I needed to reflect negative energy away from me that was coming in, because I was, you know, having all kinds of drama because of divorce things and stuff like that. And mirrors just made sense. So I found ways to use them in a positive way. And so when people were telling me, oh, you know, oh, mirror magic, no, I don't touch that. That's negative magic. I'm like, are you kidding me? No, it's really doesn't have to be. It's all in what you put into it.
Sure.
That's what's important with any, well, with, let's face it, with magic and with life, it's what you put into it. So it's if you're going into a situation with a good intention and you're being mindful, your outcome's going to be fine, and you're not going to harm anybody. Mm-hmm. If you go into it and you're, you know, angry, and I'm like, I'm going to get you. Well, you're going to cause harm, and you're going to get the backlash. And you know, you if you want to be that, but some people just want to be that person. So, but yeah, it's just energy. You're absolutely right, and you know, you can use a fire to cook your food and warm your home, or you can use a fire to burn your house down.
Well, I was going to say, doesn't the rule of three still apply even to that? I mean, you know, if you do something nasty to someone else, it's going to be visited upon you three times. I mean, that's what we've heard throughout the years.
Yeah, that is one of the tenets that we hear that's been thrown around. And while there's a lot of us magic users who don't necessarily believe in exactly a rule of three necessarily, we do see things, you know, that when people carry negative vibes and that's all they put out, their lives are generally not so very happy.
Because if that three thing was truly real, I'd be wishing that both Heidi and Eric were millionaires every day.
Aww.
Right? Aww. Right? Exactly. That would be great.
I would wish it back to you.
Speaking of magic, and that would be some very nice magic.
That would
speaking
be,
of the intersection of magic and witchery, mm-hmm. and Halloween, what is your view of the actual spiritual component of Halloween? In other words,
ghosts.
For you, you know, is that truly a time when the veil is thinner? And if so, why do you think that is? Or is it just kind of convention? We've made it so.
Okay, that is an interesting question. It's something I've been doing a lot of thinking about, actually. I do think it's real. I noticed it when I was a kid. And what's interesting, because I have these experiences where I had sensed, I've been like, there's something more to Halloween than just candy and, you know, some little fun scares. It always felt to me like there was something more there. And when I started writing this Halloween book, I went and I talked to a lot of my witches and I was like, so this is the way I always felt. What about you guys? Mm-hmm. And a great majority of them came back to me and said, oh yeah, I always noticed back then, even when they were little kids, that there was something different in the air. And it's not the same as, you know, the other gift, you know, getting holidays where, you know, you were getting candy, so you were always happy. But they always felt like Halloween was something different. Well, here's the thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately. The Celts believed that an in-between time was the most powerful time that there is. And we recently, I went to the planetarium here in St. Louis. And when we were, and you know, you see these things over and over and they say they don't always click, but then sometimes they do. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about you see that shadow that goes across the moon every month. And of course the same thing happens every day here on Earth. When the sun sets, there's that shadow that goes across the land. Well, the interesting part is, and they call it, and you're going to love this, one of the names for that is actually the Twilight Zone, because that's where they got the name for the show. That's where the name for the show comes from, is the Twilight Zone. It's the zone that goes around the Earth when the sun is setting. And I'd forgotten about this, but my grandfather was a ham radio operator, and they can actually communicate along that line much better than any other line. So it's like there's an energy that crackles along that.
Yeah, I used to dabble with ham radios. We used to call it the skip.
Yeah.
We would get
you
the skip.
You know what I'm talking about, yep. then. Right? Yep. So there's like an energy that crackles along that line, and somehow it's easier to, okay, but that's sunset. It's an in-between time. So the Celts might have had something there. And there's two big in-between times that happen in the year. And they're the shifts that happen when we go from basically the light half of the year to the dark half of the year. One of them is one of them is Samhain or Halloween. The other one is Beltane or May Day. And the other interesting thing is in Rome, right around the time when they were celebrating Samhain in the Celtic areas, in Rome, they were celebrating Lemuria. Mm-hmm. Which mm-hmm. wasn't exactly May 1st. It was like more like May 13th, I think.
Sure.
9th through 13th. It was also a 3-day holiday, and it was also a festival of the dead.
So, very interesting. I'm going to go on a limb and figure that you don't commune with the dead and you don't eat small children to further your agenda. But that
Never.
Being said, and the well, reason
boring
why,
witch.
The reason well, why I'm bringing that up is because Hollywood.
You know what's even weirder? You're not even ugly.
Thank you. In fact, I was joking. I was joking around.
You're clean shaven.
Yeah,
even.
Yeah. I was gonna say, where's the warts and the long nose? Where is this?
Well, I do have the crazy hair sometimes in the morning, so that happens. And actually, I do communicate with the spirit world sometimes. So, but you know, it's not in a bad, scary, like necromancer kind of way.
Yeah.
It's
well,
like a talking to my ancestors kind of way.
And the reason why I brought that up is because Hollywood has given us, the general public, people that are not practitioners of Wicca or anything else, you know, paganism, they've given us all these stereotypes that we assume are correct because we saw it in a movie.
Right. Totally, yeah.
Which part bothers you the most? I mean, if you had a top five list of little annoyances that we got from Hollywood, what would they be?
Oh, boy. Okay, let me think about this really quick. Okay, here's a good one. Bad witches are ugly and good witches are pretty.
Well, yeah, I've seen The Wizard of Oz. I know how that rolls.
Right? Yeah, totally. But really, it's really kind of terrible, and it's a reflection on more than just witches. It's really a reflection on society that we have to stop thinking that anyone who we don't find physically attractive, you know, they must be terrible people, because it's not about what's outside, it's about what's inside. So I think that is my number one pet peeve.
Let me really quickly add this. You're absolutely correct. I didn't realize how correct you are. Until my four-year-old, my little daughter, Head Start, so God bless her, you know, little soul, and gosh, it's been a hard week, and all that kind of stuff, but she differentiated between good people and bad people by how they look, their outward appearance. Mm-hmm. You know, she must be good because she's really pretty. Well, she's not really good because she's not that good looking, and that's, of course, media played into that.
Ingrained.
Exactly. It totally is.
It floored me. I'm thinking, well, that's not something we taught you. We've never said that as parents.
Yeah.
Where is she getting this from?
We don't realize that they're learning that.
She's obviously psychic, Joel.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it was, when my little girl, the weirdest thing happened, we had a friend over, and they used to have a cat. And she walked up and mentioned the cat's name and said, "Do you still have that, whatever the name was, cat?"
See?
How do you know I had a cat?
There you go.
Freaked
there you go.
The person right out.
Kids are so open. They're so open, aren't they? They're amazing.
Yeah.
I just got a question for you. Now, do you think something's technically or mentally wrong with somebody who trick or treats to their 30? I'm asking for a friend.
I don't at all. In fact, I know there's some people who are like, "Oh, you're too old to trick or treat."
I know a 39-year-old that still doesn't.
I don't believe that. If you guys came to my house with a bag and held it out as a trick or treat, I guarantee every one of you would get candy.
I know I did.
Yeah.
Yay!
I believe that. I do.
My better half still trick or treats.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome.
One of my favorite times of year, too, was Halloween, when I was around all my nieces and nephews and the neighborhood kids.
Yeah.
And I was a destined one to take them all around. I was like, heck yeah, I'm getting some candy.
That's right. I do it for free.
Absolutely.
I'm on it.
So since we are talking about that, it just occurs to me, what is the background? What's the rationale for trick-or-treating? Where did that come about from? Why do we do that? Why is that attached to Halloween?
Because I was just thinking that it really ties into the whole adults can have candy too if they want. I don't care. Because where it comes from is back in the day, and I'll give you the super bare bones of how this happened. We had Samhain, which was a Celtic festival, and that was celebrated right around October 31st, but not necessarily on that day because it was an astronomical holiday. That happened. Mm-hmm. Then we had Lumeria, which the Romans were celebrating. Well, they were trying to, the Catholic Church was trying to bring the pagans that were still, the Romans that were still pagan, trying to bring them around. And they wouldn't stop celebrating Lumeria. So they said, okay, here's what we're going to do. The day after the day that you guys celebrate your thing, we're going to have a huge festival that's going to be bigger than your party. We're going to call it All Saints Day. And instead of, you know, thinking about the other dead people, we're just going to talk about the saints that are dead. And this is going to be a big thing. And it brought a lot of people over. And they kind of stopped celebrating Lumeria and started celebrating All Saints Day. Mm. Well, the same thing was happening in the British Isles later on down the road. And they were like, man, these people in the rural areas, they won't stop celebrating Samhain, even though we're trying to Christianize this area like crazy. They weren't giving that up because they had so many things rooted in that. The people wanted that festival. They weren't going to stop, you know, venerating their beloved dead, and they weren't going to stop, you know, having their bonfires. So here's what they did. They said, let's take All Saints Day and let's move it. And we're going to move it to October, or not October 31st, we're going to move it to November 1st, which was the day after everybody was celebrating Samhain during the medieval times. So they moved it.
Interesting.
Yeah, they totally moved that festival to try to co-opt Samhain and get people to stop celebrating. Well, the thing about the Celts, they were like still not really too sure about it, and they were like, you know what? We still want to remember our dead. We get that we're doing the Saints thing. So they gave them. They were like, all right, I'll give you All Saints Day, and I'll give you one more. We're going to do All Souls Day, and that's going to be on November 2nd, so that you can remember your dead at our festival, and you don't have to worry about Samhain. And the people were like, all right. And that's how it happened.
Cooperation. Well,
this is why this is important, because what happened was they started a tradition. What people would do was a tradition called souling, and they would go from door to door and offer up prayers for the people at that house, their beloved dead, their people who had passed on, who might or might not have moved on from purgatory and gone into heaven. The idea was the more prayers you got, that would lighten the soul and they could move on to heaven. So what would happen was children and the poor would start going door to door and saying, I will pray for your people if you will offer us a treat. And they would give them soul cakes. And that was probably one of the beginnings of
Snickers hijacked
the idea of trick or treat. Yeah. Was they would go to door and they would get treats for saying prayers for the dead. So
we need to have All Politics Day so we can all come together and work this out and get candy or something.
Well, they do. It's called November 4th or 5th when we go in the voting booth. But you know,
we don't get candy though.
No, yeah, but you do get a sticker. You get a sticker.
We do get a sticker, which is almost as good as candy.
We feel good about those stickers.
And now we can show everybody our sticker.
Yeah,
because we have the internet. And that's pretty great.
Yeah, then they beat you up.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about that. That's funny because that was far before the days that, you know, it said it's brought to you by Hershey's. But I was also in the back of my head curious, does the Latino Day of the Dead play into this at all? Is that kind of an offshoot of Samhain?
I think it's actually more like an offshoot of All Saints and All Souls Day.
Okay.
But yeah. And that kind of came later, and it falls around the same time, and we're seeing more of the symbolism of the Dia de los Muertos stuff is coming over into the Halloween, so we're seeing a lot of that right now starting to combine more than it ever has before. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I've noticed that as well.
There's another thing. That was the first basically getting treats door to door around that time was for All Souls Day. But here's the other thing that happened, and this is really kind of cool. Everything kind of stopped for a while. It fizzled out a little bit. People came over to America, and this is what happened when America really changed Halloween tremendously, because what they had done is, well, All Hallows Day became Halloween. And that Hallows means holy. Mm-hmm. So that's where that's why we started calling it Halloween instead of Samhain.
And my last name is Holly, so I'm Heidi Holy, right?
Yes. Oh, you are.
I am.
Isn't that a Neil Diamond song?
I think so.
Sweet.
It actually means one who lives near the holly trees, my last name. And the holly trees are what was made the thorn crown of Christ.
That is one of the stories. Yeah, wow. That's one of the stories. That's kind of cool.
All right, Mickey, don't mean to interrupt, but what is the silent horrors of Halloween?
The silent horrors of Halloween.
Yeah, grab me that headline.
I wrote that section because I thought this was so neat. A lot of people do these big Halloween parties at their house, and you've got you've got a house full of people, so you're not going to put a movie on because people are talking and hanging it out and having a great time. So I got this great idea to pull up silent movies and play them on your TV while you're having your Halloween
party.
That's
so cool, like Nosferatu and those things. Right? Yeah, heck yeah, I'm feeling
it. Those movies, I'm not kidding. And I mean, we've got some great modern horror movies, and we really do, but those old black and white ones, they just chill you in such a primal way. They're scary. They really are. And the cool thing is you don't have to have sound. So you're just hanging out. You're having your drink. You're laughing. You're talking about the cool costume or whatever you did last night. And but on the TV, instead of having this big blank screen, you know, that's just taking up half your room, you're adding ambiance by having these. And
that's
and
a good idea. Them, that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
I used to be
an MC at a metal club in St. Louis, and we had a big screen there, and in between bands I played the Addams Family on that.
Okay.
And that was kind of where the idea came from. We played it with the sound down, we just played music, but we had the Addams Family playing on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now we know where Rob Zombie got it from for his videos to include Nosferatu,
right,
and a few other things.
Right.
From silent film
my
era.
Gosh.
He stole
silent
it from films. You. He stole it from you.
You know what? I that's okay. That's okay, Rob Zombie. I love you anyway.
You'll let him have it. Go ahead.
I'll let him have it.
Yeah.
Respect.
Have that. Yeah.
I've seen several haunted attractions while you're in line will run classic horror films to watch with no sound. Just like you were saying, you know, it's the images, it's the visual.
It's the images,
and that's the era we're in, too. We're in the era of mashups. So there's nothing unusual about it anymore. You have, I mean, how many times just at home, you know, you'll have the TV on because, say, there's a hurricane coming, right? Yeah. But you don't need to listen to the incessant babbling about the hurricane.
Well, you know what, Eric?
You got music on, or you have some other form of sound on, and then you're sitting here reading a book or looking at some other
device. On your computer.
So now you have three or four different forms of
I think one of our guests that we had said it best, I think it was during when we were talking about the cord cutting of cable, that the television is the current generation's current iteration of the fireplace. We have it on the background.
Yeah.
It's just on back there. It's soothing. You know it's there. You know you can look at it. So
that's true. That's very
that's a good
insightful.
Point.
It is.
Well, see, I would do a shadow puppet show or something.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, what's your favorite Halloween type movie? What's your favorite type Halloween type programming?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, one that we like to watch around here, and I know quite a few other people that love to watch this one on Halloween too, is I love Young Frankenstein.
yeah, good stuff.
Also Practical Magic sometimes, you know.
Hocus Pocus,
not
maybe?
Not really a Halloween movie, but yeah.
How about
love Practical Magic.
How about Hocus Pocus? Come on. You got to say Hocus Pocus.
Hocus Pocus is a good one,
which
too.
Is the Eastwick, right?
Which is a Eastwick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, definitely. Well, and you know what? The other thing that I love is the old school Universal monster movies.
Mm. Yes.
Oh.
Well, it wouldn't be complete.
I got my teeth on those. I love those movies. So, you know what? Just put on, you know, Boris Karloff. I'm loving life.
Okay, quick question. Won't be complete unless talk about movies. If we didn't ask you, did you like the movie The Witch?
Oh my gosh! You know what? It was pretty good. It was pretty good. I can watch stuff like that and separate my witch self from the reality of being a witch to the idea of a movie witch. So, you know, that kind of stuff. So I liked it.
Just think of this. Charmed is coming back. They're redoing.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
They're doing a new series.
Now they're the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Yeah, yeah, right?
Yeah, because they did that Riverdale that's all like dark and weird. So
yeah
I think it's going to be along that line. So fun.
It should be fun.
All right. Hey, we've got a few more minutes here.
Things.
I would love to hear. Not separating. We want to hear what is your actual world view? What is your view of life and the universe? Give it to us in 2 minutes. Go.
Okay. Well, we're just spirits that are living in these human bodies, and we're here to try to figure everything out and to experience life on the physical plane. People need to be good to each other. You know, we're only here for a short time. So, you know, you go through your day, and if you you see somebody that needs help, you help them. But you also have to try to protect yourself and be happy too, and realizing that there's not all good people in the world. So we have to also be mindful and safe and smart. But I think love is the most important thing. I think it's a thread that binds the universe together. And I think that that's a lesson that everybody needs to learn.
Because people are just people.
It doesn't matter what faith you are, what color your skin is, where you were born, or where you live now. It does, none of that matters. However you identify yourself as far as, you know, gender, sexuality, any of that, it doesn't matter, man. It's just people. And as soon as people can understand that and realize that, man, the world's going to be a much better place. Peace, and we're working on it.
Yeah, peace, love, and Cheetos, man. Peace, love, and Cheetos.
Darn right, yeah.
Well, the book is The Little Book of Halloween. The author is Mickey Mueller, and it's been a pleasure talking with you this last hour, Mickey. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. This was so much fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Pick it up. Amazon's got, of course, you can go to Llewellyn Direct at Llewellyn Publishing Worldwide. Pick the book up. You're going to love it. A lot of great Halloween ideas as well as a cool history of Halloween. Until next time, everyone, take care of each other, love each other, and, well, get witchy with it. Thank you for listening to this edition of After Hours AM, and please remember to like us on Facebook and also follow us over on Twitter.